When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Here at William Hill, you'll find pre-game and in-play cricket odds on loads of competitions. From test matches to one-day internationals, T20s and domestic cricket, we've got everything covered. Visit WilliamHill.com. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly. William Hill. It's who you play with.
Season 4 of Middle Peas Umpire is sponsored by Step One.
Hello and welcome to Middle Peas Umpire. I am Miles Jupp and I am joined as ever by 95 mile an hour plus pace merchant Mark Wood. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Miles, or should I call you Babushka?
Babushka, that is not actually a Kate Bush reference. I was just explaining to Mark that my hair, which has become increasingly sort of grey and wiry, like a sort of mad professor. There's a dog called Bushka who another parent owns at the school I take my children to, the primary school. And when I turned up with my hair looking like this, everyone said, "Oh my God, you look like Bushka." And I spent some time posing for photographs with this dog Bushka, with its grey curly hair. And then one of the photos I said to Rachel, my wife, I said, "Oh, my head, look at that one, actually. My head looks really good in that." And then we zoomed in, and the reason it looked good was because Bushka the dog's paw was right in the middle of my... right, where you should have that nice tuft at the front.
I think if I think of what you maybe look like, you look like either Professor as a Pat Pendant off when he's got the wacky, off the wacky races, he's got the hair that comes to out to the side. Or you look like someone, you know, like if you take the casing off a pillow and you punch the middle of the pillow and the feathers spurt it.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I've always wanted, I'm not a vain person, but I've never really aspired to look like a piece of like beaten up furniture. But at the same time, I've never felt like one. You look very cheerful, actually. Fresh faced.
Yes, I've had a couple of days away, 2 or 3 days in Portugal. Mm-hmm. Spotted some cricket lovers out there. We went to a place called Villamora, which was beautiful. Got stopped a couple of times by some nice people, chatting about the cricket a little bit. But in general, just nice to get a couple of days away. I mean, I've trained really hard I had five days after the operation. Obviously, I had a bit of downtime, but every week I've been, you know, pushing it. And then last week, I'm off my full run-up and things are looking great. But then at the start of the week, my elbow was a little bit sore, and I just the physio said, "Look, we've pushed it hard for a long time. Let's just back it off a little bit for about a week." And tomorrow I'm heading to dum 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 da dum the Death Star, which is Loughborough.
So, oh gosh, what are they going to do? They're not going to remodel your action, are they?
No.
Years and years of success stories of people's actions being remodeled at Loughborough. How awful if one of those suddenly ended in disaster.
Well, last time I was at Loughborough, they had the Vicon on me, which they put the dots on you. So it's your skeleton, and they get to show you like how your body's moving and all this kind of stuff. You know, it shows how your body moves and how your action looks. And it's good, actually. But this time, just going there, the England physio, he lives in Worcester, Ben Langley. So he's meeting me sort of halfway. So I'll have a couple of days boring with him, and then we'll know more about the elbow then. But I pushed it hard, and it pulled up a little bit sore after after like a couple of weeks of full run. A real positive session on Friday. I thought I was going to play for Durham in the 2020. And mentally, you know, I think that's the thing I found hardest is I keep thinking, right, I'm just about to play or I'm just about to come back. I mean, I'd play for everyone. I'd love to play for Asherton and anybody just to get a game and play some cricket. So,
Monmouth Fours?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'd love to play with you. Oh, my God, I would love to play with you.
I haven't played for ages, so I've got the fear. But I think with your situation, it's about just to take, you know, as a sort of kindly line manager will say, you know, take as long as you want, mate. And there is no point rushing back into it, is it?
Well, there's plenty of cricket left. I mean, I want to get back as soon as I can, but there's plenty of cricket left. I just want to play for anybody at the minute. It's not necessarily England or anything. I just want to try and play a game to get the sort of competitive edge back a bit. It's been a bit lonely bowling at no net by myself. Now I'm bowling at some batters and that, which is good. But I think that's the hard thing about rehab. Like when people don't see, it's like in the gym and then hours where you're by yourself, it just gets a bit like, oh, I mean, it's great and I didn't get us wrong being a cricketer, but them days are tough because you're just like, you think, am I actually progressing? You don't actually think that you are. It's more like you feel like it's just a ticky box to get to the next stage.
Well, that's the unseen bit, isn't it?
Well, you've got to find fun in it. You've got to find fun in like, right, today I'm going to, you know, mix up and try and bowl skills. How many times can I hit the top of off? How many Yorkers can I bowl? Today I'll try my wobble seam. And right, today I'll see how quick I can get the speed gun. But all in the back of your mind, I think for me, it's always been when I feel like I can bowl with a, where my mind isn't on an injury, I feel like I can do really well because then I'm focused on the other end. At the minute, I'm not quite there where I'm focusing on the batsman at the other end. I'm still thinking, how's my arm? Is it going to hurt? Am I bowling fast? Stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
And that's not the same as nerves, is it? That's the kind of, you know, that's the sort of ugliness that is doubt, I guess, rising to the surface. And that's the thing you need to be on the other side of. And that's the bit I reckon that it's definitely worth taking the time over. So that's, you know, so that you can fully dispense with that. Because what are the memories, or if you're doing like visualizations, what are those moments on a field that you have in your head?
Well, I try and think of the intrinsic feeling of when I've bowled well. So it's like feeling free, loose, and loose in an aspect, not where, you know, my mind's scrambled and I'm loose like that. Oh, it's more like loose as in like I can just let my arm, like the ball seems to just fly out my fingers. My arm feels like almost like a catapult or a delayed slingshot and then boom. It comes flying through, and that freedom, and like you just, you're never tired. Things aren't heavy. Everything goes towards the target. And obviously it's very hard when I've got my arm taped up, and you know, it's still a bit swollen. But you've got to go through those checkpoints to then get to that stage. So it's a constant battle in your mind. You're fighting it all the time. Of right, keep pushing through to get to the point you need to get to. But at the same time, thinking, I want to feel free. I want to feel, you know, like it's flying on my fingers. Like it's actually a weird one because obviously usually I've got my ankle. That's been the problem. And there'll be days where it's like, you know, it might hurt running or I'm worried about landing. It's a totally different feeling with the elbow because when you run in, you feel like, I feel so fit. I'm running in. There's no problems. And the elbow, because when you land with your foot, there's a crunch. The elbow, that isn't really that. It's sort of like a ballistic movement, a bit like golf, where once you start swinging, there's no way you can really tell how it's going to go. And that's the same when I start bowling. Until I let go of the ball, I can't feel a pinch or anything. So that bit's absolutely fine. It's only then when I release the ball, I might go, oh, that was a bit of a pinch there, or that was a bit sore. And then when I walk back my mark, sometimes it aches, sometimes there's nothing. So it's that trying to get over where I'm looking for something rather than just running in and bowling. Because like I say, it doesn't feel like a real injury because it feels like it should be just normal because my legs and everything's fine.
It's the side of the I suppose sport people don't see. You get that kind of glamorized sort of, you know, Instagram content version of, oh, you know, the men's team or the women's team in the gym or whatever, and it all looks like a laugh. But what people don't see, I guess, is those kind of those lonely hours, which is just about building it up, getting it ready. And I guess those are the things, you know, when you see someone on the pitch doing something absolutely astonishing, it's not just the thing that they've pulled off that they're celebrating, is it? It's what's gone in. It's what's gone into that.
Yeah, and I think if I think of how it's been since my operation, I've worked hard. You know, I've done everything the ECB have set us out to do. I've worked well with the Durham physios and the Durham staff. They've all, you know, everybody's looked after us really well. And I think that's the frustrating thing, is when you're doing everything you can and it's not quite happening as quick as you want or giving you the break that you're after straight away, it can be very frustrating. You know, I've been working so hard, turn up, you know. And this is the other worrying thing for me. I'm getting an hour and a half physio just to bowl 4 or 5 overs in the net. That shouldn't normally happen. It should be 20 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes. I mean, I know a lot of it's strapping and stuff, but it seems to me like it's a long time. Then I'm having a swim, doing my arm stuff, getting it ready. Then I'll go and see the physio, have all that stuff. Then I'll go get strapped. Then I'll do, you know, a warm-up. Then I'll bowl. Then I've got strength. I'll run or sprint after. So it's full on for like a few hours and stuff. And to do that, you know, like every other day, it's I have worked hard trying to get myself right. And that's the bit that's annoying.
Well, also that thing as well, you know, I know that you've turned down jollies, basically, you know, things that would have been gone fun to do or been, you know, economically worthwhile just to focus on your rehab. And I think that sort of focus that you have is amazing. And the ultimate motivation, I suppose, is going out and playing for your country and your club.
It's not a sob story, though, Miles. It's not like, I'm incredibly fortunate to be in a position in the amount of games I've played and stuff like that. So it's not, this isn't a sob story, poor me. It's just, you know, the minute I'm finding it a bit frustrating that I'm not back out there playing, especially when you see the lads on the TV and I see Durham in the 2020s and stuff like that, I want to be out there playing. I think that can be as frustrating as anything else, is that when you feel like you're doing everything you can, but it's not quite clicking. But again, you know, I understand the fortunate position I'm in, and you know, I could be out there, you know, like my granddad and people are trying to go and do the mines and stuff like that. So I understand that I'm in a great position, but I just, you know, I want to be back out there playing. I guess the competitive side of it wants to be charged in. I've had 2 or 3 years where, from an injury point of view, things have been pretty good, and I've bowled high speeds, backed it up. So this is just one of them things that just really irritates me.
Well, I know that you know, when you're in the gym or you're in the nets on your own, you know, that is just you. Where you're not alone is in terms of wanting to be out there again, because people, not just mates like me, but people, you know, you're not alone in that regard. People would love to see you bowling again. And I think there needn't be an impatience about it. Whenever you're able to do that, it will just be glorious. And whenever it is, it will be worth the wait. I don't want to sound like a life coach, because I don't really know what I'm talking about. On one level, I have no idea how hard you work. But on another level, I just know that you work so, so hard to get yourself in the shape that you need to be in to play. And I genuinely mean to do. Please take as long as you need.
Thank you, man. On a lighter note, Miles.
What pants are you wearing?
I've moved from blackberries to cherries at the minute. That's the fruit of choice at the minute. I've been.
Now, is this is this to do with taste, or is this to do with the season?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've been buying them from the shop. You know what I like as well? The old. It makes me feel like a cowboy back in the day. You know, when they used to spit tobacco.
Yeah.
Into a bucket. I do that into a container for me pips of me cherries, and I think I end up just saying like John Wayne quotes, like that'll be the day I'm spitting my pip into.
I have to. Oh, talking of professional cricketers, I've met a number of professional cricketers this week, Woody.
You're not going to tell me about the WhatsApp picture, are you? the glint in your eye in that picture.
What Woody is referring to is I on our Middle Please Umpire WhatsApp group, I put a picture of me with the Do you know who I mean by Mike Lefton, the England cricketer Mike Lefton? I was very privileged to be asked on Friday. I was hosting this gala dinner for the Bob Willis Trust, which is raising money for research and treatment of prostate cancers. Part of it was to interview a panel of people that included Nasser Hussain, Mark Butcher, Ravi Shastri, and, would you believe it, Mike Lefton. So we did... 20 minutes on stage together. So it was very nice to see him, and he was on fine form. As indeed was Nasser Hussain, who has... He's got this kind of pantomime villain aspect to him. I don't know what... Which he kind of trades on.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He took... very... he literally talks about... He sits there talking about really being really unpopular in front of people. Clearly really enjoy his company. It's extraordinary. But he was... But he does... He is one of those people that gets a sort of... Gets a bit of grief at those sort of events.
Have you heard him on commentary when he goes, oh, come on, Nas, and stuff like that? Like, he badgers himself when he's like, he says something stupid. That's good crack, good fun.
Now, shall we? We've talked relatively seriously about your state of mind. We've talked quite jovially about the state of my fucking hair. We've got a mailbag to have a little look at before we play our interview with this week's special guest. Okay, The Middle Please Umpire, Series 4, Episode 7, Mailbag. Let's have a look. So we've got cricketers in unexpected places. I always hope these will stay jolly. If these ever go dark, I'll be sort of really upset. You'll never guess who I saw being bundled into the back of a police car, etc. Here we go. So this is Matthew Ellison. A few weeks ago, a day or so after the recent New Zealand Test match at Lords, I was shopping in Sainsbury's Sedgefield. Other supermarkets are available, just not in Sedgefield. Sedgefield, of course, that was Tony Blair's constituency. When I was leaving, that's my note, not Matthew's. He's, for whatever reason, he's chosen to stay off the subject. Perhaps he thinks it's controversial. When I was leaving the cheese aisle, a whole cheese aisle. Sometimes it's a dairy aisle. Have you been to the Sainsbury's Sedgefield, Mark? That sounds extraordinary.
Am I meant to answer?
I'd like Matthew to follow up this. I think a cheese aisle is... it's got to be the cheese section of the dairy aisle. A whole cheese aisle is too.
Maybe Wallace and Gromit own it.
I would be tempted to move there if there's a whole aisle that's cheese based. Anyway, not to interrupt. Let me. I was shopping in Sainsbury's Sedgefield. Other supermarkets are available, just not in Sedgefield. When I was leaving the cheese aisle to head down through the fruit and veg towards the self-service checkout, it was at that moment I was passed by none other. I love the fact that people always put none other than in these letters. It delights me. I was passed by none other than Durham and England opener Alex Lees.
Alex Lees, of course he lives around there, yeah.
Alex Lees, near the cheese. I didn't think to stop and observe what cheese he had selected. I've been kicking myself ever since. Well, Mark, if anyone can give us the inside track on this, it's you. What sort of cheese would Alex Lees be most likely to buy?
Well, coming from Yorkshire, I would have thought it would be something from Dales. I couldn't imagine it being Red Leicester because obviously fierce competitor of Yorkshire.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine it being Philadelphia because obviously that is overseas.
That's probably Liam Plunkett's favourite cheese.
Yes. I'm going to go for...
And indeed Rockies. Yeah. He ought to like Roquefort. But
the Yorkshire...
Listen to myself. I'm out of control here. Okay, Wensleydale. Well... You've probably got his number. Can you text him and find out? Actually, do you know what? Wait till the run chase is over because they're probably focused on that, aren't they? Rather than answering text messages about cheese. But I would like an answer on this.
Oh, he's just on the balcony here now. He's having baby bell.
Well, at series 5. By that point, Mark, I would like you to have found out exactly what cheese Alex Lees bought in Sedgefield. And I would actually like Matthew to clarify, is there a whole cheese aisle? That sounds unbelievably decadent. We've had a letter here from a man called, this is a hell of a nickname, Nathan the Producer. I can only assume this is our actual producer, Nathan. Let's read on and find out. I am writing to myself. I am writing to myself. To share a very surprising cricketer sighting. I was recently at an Elton John concert at Hyde Park when I spotted none other than the little master himself, Sachin Tendulkar. I was so surprised to think that he may be a fan of the Rocket Man and to see him just wandering around that I totally forgot to ask him onto the podcast or even what his favourite TV owl was. There were also no bird tables handy to present to him. Sorry, chaps. Well, you've absolutely managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory there, Nathan. That would have been a perfect opportunity.
to have, oh, the sight of the little master making his way back from Hyde Park with a bird table slung over his shoulder, singing your song to himself. That would have been gorgeous. Anyway, that's not a bad spotting at all. Very well done. Sachin, if you're listening, I presume you're a fan, please let us know your top five Elton John songs. Thanks, Satch. Right, Quirky Cricket Grounds. This is sent in by David Smith. Possibly not the one that used to open for Sussex, but who knows? Probably not the one that taught me drama at school. That would just be because he'd say, wouldn't he? Back in the 90s, I played for a team called Monkland Cricket Club, and we decided to go on a tour one year. The fact that it's one year suggests that this is leading towards disaster. I'm not sure how it came about, but we secured a match against RAF Macrahanish. It's a remote airfield in the west of Scotland. There's a lot. I'm quite good on the west of Scotland.
Why did you say that? Like you're in the Supermarket Isle? RAF Macrahanish. That's Isle 3, Macrahanish.
Isle 3. Could an Inspector Sands make his way to RAF Macrahanish? I don't know. I mean, Ardnamurk and Ardtornish I can do, but Macrahanish, maybe it's just Macrahanish. It's a remote airfield in the west of Scotland. On arrival, we had to go through a checkpoint and sign in before we were allowed on the base. I recall that many of the players signed in with names at the time would have been on a terror watch list. Oh dear. Anyway, the pitch was an artificial mat on a vacant field, and whilst we were playing in the pishing rain, helicopters were coming and going. This had the effect of regularly blowing the bails off and the draft causing bowlers at certain moments to bowl like Malcolm Marshall. We didn't win very often in those days, but we managed to win that day. That sounds like an extraordinarily terrifying environment in which to play cricket, but congratulations, somewhat belated, David, on your victory. This is from Ed Stone. I wondered what happened to the Ed Stone. He describes it as a Bob Hoskins moment. Hello, Miles and Mark. You may recall my last contribution to MPU when I confused Gus Fraser and Derek Pringle one very fateful day. Ed, I am unlikely to forget. I am unlikely to forget that ever. I appreciate that writing again is almost bound to end in an anticlimax for all concerned, but here goes. Your encounter with Bob Hoskins, where you mistook his reach for the coffee machine for a welcoming handshake, reminded me of a similar encounter I had with a famous cricketer mid-game. In 1982, at the age of 9, I was gifted a course of summer school cricket training at Lords, where Wilf Slack and Joel Garner coached us lucky youngsters. Very lucky. It was a fabulous education in cricket that gave me all sorts of advantages on the school cricket pitch. Big Bird was, and probably is to this day, a gentleman. He really took us under his wing, just to continue the avian metaphor. It was that summer, a few months after the course, when I thought Joel... A few months after the course, I thought Joel had recognised me in the crowd. Somerset had yet again made the final of the B&H Cup. I was lucky enough to be on a rover ticket, wandering around the Lord's ground. I suppose I was one of those annoying kids walking the boundary between deliveries. During game, the players were interacting with the crowd, and even though I probably imagined I was the best kid ever to have been trained under Joel Big Bird Garner, I really didn't think he'd remember me. With Somerset well in control and heading for another trophy, they put Joel out to third man, and he ended up fielding on the boundary, very close to where I was seated by the rope. It must have been the end of an over, but he glanced over his shoulder, turned and then strode towards me with a smile. Wow, he's recognised me, I thought, and was popping over to say hello. I began to wave at him, and he was now waving and gesturing like I was a long-lost friend. As he arrived at the boundary and I prepared for a handshake, hug or high five, he proceeded to look straight past me, stretch his long arm into the row behind me, and grabbed a can of Red Stripe from someone he clearly did know. In my mind's eye, he took a swig of beer before returning to bowl his spell. He took a match winning 3 for 13 in 8.1 overs that day. Even now, it recalls a rather embarrassed feeling in front of a Pat Laws, but he was a great man nonetheless. I think that is incredibly sweet that you would think that he would remember you after, you know, months apart. That is absolutely glorious. Well, very nice to hear again from you, Ed. And that Bob Hoskins moment was. Thank you for reminding me of that excruciating moment.
Hi, it's David Gower here. Yes, it's me. Look, it's slightly embarrassing, but look, Mark and Miles, they've forgotten the email address again. So look, if you've got any cricketing tales, stories, whatever it might be you want to send to them, please email them at middleplease@hotmail.com. And if that's too much, well, try Twitter or Instagram.
The mailbag will remain open. Unusual grounds, cricketers spotted in unusual or everyday places, umpiring incidents, or indeed worst games. Perhaps tell us about the best selfie that you've had with an exciting cricketer. Mark, who's the best person you've had a selfie with?
Lewis Moody.
Oh, right. Yeah, cool. Oh, you did a dinner together with him?
Yes.
At Lawrence, is that right? You do go on about them a bit, Mark. It's a bit, if you don't mind me saying, it's a bit embarrassing.
I wonder if I saw him somewhere and I waved at him. I wonder if he'd wave back.
I think he would, because you're Mark Wood. So he'd think, there's Mark Wood. Don't you think?
I think he'd think, who's that bloke waving at me?
No, I think he'd be very receptive to a wave, high five, or indeed hug.
I also remember when I made my debut, my mate sent a screenshot. It was like something like England cricket new number 666667, Adam Lyth and Mark Wood. My mate sent a screenshot of the comment. The first comment was, Mark Wood looks like a plaster.
Do you know the name of the cricketer who got cap number one?
W.G. Griff?
No. Unless I'm mistaken, his name was Henry Jupp.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
My great, great, great uncle. I think that's right.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. He only for tests, though. Never got to play a T20, sadly. But he would have been exactly the sort of person that I imagine would have been picked up by London Spirit. A fine chap.
I feel like he was great against anything under 63 mile an hour, but he really struggled against anything. Against spin, dominated.
Well, he was an opener, so I imagine he was probably quite good at pace. But he scored the first ever half century, I think, by an Englishman in a test match. But I would say, with every passing generation as a family, we've got worse at cricket. Now, a person who would have been able to answer that question without a shadow of a doubt is this week's guest. Would you like to try and guess who this week's guest is, Mark?
Give me a clue.
I've given you one really vague clue, which is that he knows a lot about cricket. I don't think we've had any guests on that don't know a lot about cricket. His hair is wilder than mine is at the moment, and a brighter colour.
Krusty the Clown.
No. He's a serious numbers person.
Oh,
he isn't Benedict from Sky.
He's the guy to book corner and countdown.
Well, maybe he has done that. He's on Test Match Special, Mark.
Oh, it's Andy Zoltan.
Middle Please Umpire is proud to be sponsored by Step One Underwear, the UK's choice for comfortable, breathable and no-chafe boxers. Step One believes great achievements start with getting the basics right. So delivering maximum comfort while you're compiling your century or coming in for your third spell of the day is all important. Step One's stylish boxers are worn by elite cricketers and sports people the world over. But why do they wear them? Well, they completely eliminate chafing with their ultra-glide panels, which prevent your thighs from rubbing together. So get rid of the baby powders, lotions, or whatever other remedy you use. They have got your thighs covered. Not only that, they're ethically made, sourced from sustainably grown organic bamboo, making them super soft, antibacterial, and breathable, keeping your, and I can't believe I'm saying this, meat and two veg dry all day, whether you're on the pitch or going about your other everyday shenanigans. It's not just gentlemen who get to enjoy the comfort of Step One, they have a women's boxer range as well. Step One are so confident that you'll love them that there's a 30-day money-back guarantee on your first purchase. If you don't like your first pair, for whatever reason, they will give you a full refund and you get to keep the pants. So you can try them out completely risk-free. Best of all, for a limited time, listeners of Middle Please Umpire, that's you, can get a whopping 30% off the entire range. Just head to step1.life and enter the code MP30 at checkout. See what the fuss is all about and make Step One an essential part of your daily chafe and sweat-free living. Step One, get some.
William Hill's Safer Gambling Tools helps you stay in control. You can set deposit limits, session reminders, and take timeouts whenever you need them. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly. William Hill, it's who you play with.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Andy Zoltzman, statistician, satirist, log flume activist, and indeed advocate. Andy, how are you?
Well, I mean, as long as there are log flumes in the world, my work will not be over. So, yeah,
It is. No, it's important. And you can't. It's important to just pick one issue, isn't it? So, too often people are spread too thinly, I think. But you've really
pro or anti log flumes.
You just want them to be talked about.
All right, okay. Yeah, that's good.
Basically, it's about taboo breaking.
Right, okay. That's good.
Andy, if you were to, you know, if you think about your dreams and interests as a child, if you, I mean, in your wildest dreams, and I think we all know that you have incredibly wild, vivid dreams, could you ever imagine that you would find yourself where you are today? Not just as a guest on the fourth series of Middle Please Umpire, but as suddenly to be the Test Match Special statistician.
Well,
are you still pinching yourself?
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Was it statistically always going to happen?
It was not statistically always going to happen. And it was genuinely a childhood dream, albeit I was quite an odd child with quite odd dreams, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I turned to statistics when it became achingly obvious that I was not very good at playing. So, you know, we find refuge in the numbers of those who are rather better at playing than I was.
Well, I've always imagined that, because of your sort of super intelligence, you'd be a sort of a wily spinner or something. That yesterday I found myself, and I'm sure you can picture the scene, sharing a taxi in Northumberland with the president of the UK Humanists. And he said, I've played cricket with Andy. He's an excellent wicketkeeper.
Oh, right.
Is that your discipline?
Well, I would say I was at best adequate at wicketkeeping, but I did it a little bit at school until a kid who was better at wicketkeeping turned up, and I was sent out to field at mid-on and drop 80% of the chances that came. Probably actually that's a conservative estimate.
Did you have a pocket hat on when you were wicketkeeping?
I remember having a red sun hat when I was about 10 that didn't fit very well and kept falling off. Yeah, no, it was. I was not a natural, I think it's fair to say, at any of the cricketing disciplines. But I'm flattered that I was described by a humanist as an excellent wicketkeeper, and there can be no higher praise than that.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I think it is one of the filters on Stats Guru. There's a little box you could tick that's, but what do the humanists think? Have you two met, by the way, Woody and Zoltz? Have you ever encountered each other in the flesh or digitally?
I've seen Zoltz quite a bit at the cricket. I haven't spoken him much in depth, but I've seen him a lot around. I came in the BBC box as well, where I was invited once to Test Match Special, and England got bowled out for 60. And funny enough, I've never been invited back again. So I think they think I'm a bad omen there.
I'm sure it can't be the case. But Andy, there's something I was going to check with you, which is cricket actually your favourite sport?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not even close, Miles. I mean, I love a lot of sports.
Well, that's my thing, because you know so much and follow so many of them. I wondered if it was even your, you know, like I asked Alex Stewart what his favourite sport was, and he said football.
Really?
You know, and which really, really sort of took me aback somewhat. But because you know so much about, so you probably know as much about other sports as you also know about cricket, which is terrifying and perhaps some sort that's, of symptom.
Well, a complete waste of a human brain, to be honest. But no, I know cricket's definitely my one true love.
Gosh, right. Well, let's hope your family aren't listening in.
I've told them that. Oh, I've told them that to their face on an almost weekly basis.
And that's why you're in a shed, essentially. What is your oddest or proudest piece of cricketing memorabilia?
I bought an auction a few months ago, a signed bat from the 1905 Old Trafford Test match that was signed by the England and Australia teams. It's not in very good condition, and it's got quite a lot of woodworm, but it's still a very old bat with some very dead cricketers' autographs on. So I think that's probably my favourite bit.
Was that the sort of cricketing lunch where the auction starts after you've had maybe two bottles of red wine?
No, this was just a regular online auction. And they had a lot of old cricket bats.
I wonder if it was off Harry Judd. That's who I was thinking. As you get off one of his collections there.
Well, Harry Judd has a collection of over 40 90s cricket bats. And he and I started getting very excited. Woody, I have to say, Woody's eyes glazed over very quickly. It's quite a number of topics that I bring up that you just see Woody. Sometimes he allows his chair to spin round. He thinks, oh, no, not again. I can't hear any more words about, you know, Michelangelo Atherton or whoever it might be. Do you feel as you're getting older, Andy, you are taking on more knowledge, or are you just acquiring the skills to access information more easily? I mean, technology has helped you, obviously.
Yes. Well, I think in terms of what I do on TMS, it's obviously completely changed since the internet came along. Bill Frindle used to take a trolley load of books with him everywhere to look stuff up, whereas now, you know, it's just a laptop. So I guess the skill is now knowing, not necessarily knowing a lot of facts as knowing what and what to look up and how to look it up quite quickly on air. But in, I mean, just in terms of the general process of human life, the brain does shed unnecessary. Well, I say shed unnecessary knowledge. It actually generally sheds necessary knowledge and leaves. Certainly left me with a load of sporting stats that I knew when I was 12.
Have you found any like real obscure stats that you couldn't find or anything that you were asked where you're thinking, I'm never going to find this out? Or
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. I mean, there's things regarding, occasionally get asked about, you know, players who've done things on their birthdays, which is quite fiddly to find out. generally, most things from the various databases that are around, you can dig up.
Can you do it live? Do you have access at your fingertips now? Tell us something surprising about Mark Wood. As in that would surprise Mark. Nothing would surprise me about Mark Wood, but I'm sure lots of things about Mark Wood would surprise Mark Wood.
Well, I can tell you that right now because, well, when I was coming on this podcast, I thought, well, it'd be nice to have a stat about Woody. This came up in Hobart because I was there for BBC for the Ashes. You're 6 for 37 in Hobart. Since the 1880s, only three England bowlers have taken a 5-wicket haul in a test in Australia at a lower average runs per wicket. So yours was, 6.16, 6 for 37. And those three are John Snow, Frank Tyson and Harold Larwood. So that's, the pantheon of great English fast bowlers in Australia that you joined in that game.
I'll take that. That's a great start.
What a shame there's only three places on a podium.
I think we should get Andy on every week. I mean, I already feel fantastic about myself now, eh?
Yeah, we'll have smoke blowing corner, and every week Andy could.
So obviously, he's researched me. Have you done anything on Miles?
On Miles's cricketing stats are slightly less plentiful.
I think I've got some entries. Is it called playcricket.com, the sort of club cricket archive? Yeah. Yes, you have to scroll down a lot. I mean, you might wear out your mouse scrolling. What age are you, Andy?
So, what age am I?
What age are you? These are the sort of stats you really ought to have at your fingertips.
That's 47.
47. So what age did you begin to love cricket?
I can tell you that exactly. Six. Because I remember seeing little bits of the 1981 summer on TV. One of my earliest cricketing memories is watching Chris Taveray bat, who was I grew up in Kent. And, when Taveray played for England, even at that age, whereas that was quite exciting to see Kent. And obviously he batted phenomenally slowly alongside Ian Botham batting phenomenally quickly. And I love that contrast of the fast and the slow. So that was the summer I sort of started, I guess, becoming aware of cricket. We lived in a little village that had cricket on the green. I remember going to see that. And then my dad bought me some books about it. Bought me a couple of books about the 81 Ashes that had a load of Bill Frindle stats and scorecards in the back, and I think that's when the portal.
Did Taveray get the same rap that Jack Leach got when he did the thing with Stokes? Did he get the same sort of? Did he get a Specsavers deal? Did he?
I don't think so. It wasn't quite such a dramatic. I mean, this was the old Trafford Test where England won quite easily. The Headingley match, actually, the tail enders kind of gave it a whack alongside both of them. But in the 80s, which was relatively slow scoring by the standards that we see today, Taveray was very much at the stodgy end of the defensive scale.
But when you were watching them back together, would you rather have been Botham or Taveray?
Well, I don't know. I mean, ideally a hybrid of the two. But no, I was. I mean, a grindingly tedious batsman in my limited career at school and in village cricket. I once got out for six an hour and a quarter in a school match, and four of them were an edge between the wicketkeeper and first slip.
I was about 12, I got one. I was opening, and I was in for an hour and 4 minutes. And the single was off the fourth ball I faced.
Yeah,
and we were battling it out for a draw, as we were from the beginning of every game we played. That would have been the absolute dreamy end game for it.
Miles, I've got history of that. So there's a lad I played Northumberland for. He's called Chris Weldon, lovely lad. but he was on the stodgy end that day. I think he had 6 off 66 balls. It was a 40 over game, I think. So I ran him out deliberately. I give it the old yes, no, maybe. And he was out by a street. And when we came off at the end, I just, sorry, man, I just had a brain fade then. But really, I'd had enough of his stodginess. I thought, we've got to get on with it. Yeah, I've got to get him out of there.
Well, that was you taking an executive decision. This weren't sort of captain's orders, like when Botham was told to go and run out, boycott.
Exactly.
It was you showing leadership. Because when I asked about Tavare Botham's orders, because I remember, like you, I was at that last day at the Oval in 2005. I was sitting by chance, I was sitting a few rows behind you and Chris Addison and John Oliver. We were all in the same bit, bizarrely, in front of the gas holders. But that watching that partnership between Peterson and Giles, I was probably the only person on the ground thinking, in this situation right now, the person I'd most like to be is Ashley Giles. Because I've always loved a number eight scoring runs, and I've always loved that. And I kind of, that used to sort of be my ambition at the time, is to be a sort of a non-bowling Ashley Giles that could be mainly vaguely useful at number eight.
It's good to have a dream in life, Miles. Good to have a dream.
And take some, and he took some fine catches at Gully as well. How many of the game days of that series did you go and see?
Of 05, just the 5 days at the Oval. So Chris Addison managed to get a load of tickets through being a Surrey member. So yeah, we went to all five. I think that's right up there with the greatest moments of my life, sitting watching all 5 days of that.
The 12th of September 2005, that is, yeah, was an absolutely glorious, because I remember I had to run off.
Do you both think that was the greatest series? Do you both think that?
I do think that. Just because it was the two best teams. It was, a series of unbelievably dramatic games. That the whole kind of history of England having been hammered for a decade and a half. I do. I think that was probably as good as cricket can get.
It was free to air. It sort of cut through to the public. People that you'd never.
Well, what do you think? What do you think, Woody? What's your idea? Do you have a personal favourite?
Yeah, that would be mine. That was probably I had the DVD box set of that, and me and my friends would watch that all the time. And obviously, I had an interest because Harmy was playing as well. So obviously, it just, the whole thing, I just thought, because Australia was so good, like, to be able to beat them with their superstars and their team was just, like, I think, inspiring.
Yeah. And there was some great, just in terms of, your life as a high-speed bowler, there was some, just great fast bowling and extreme speeds in that. I remember Brett Lee and Sean Tate at the Oval bowling at Peterson. And there's a half hour after lunch when Lee and Warne bowling at Peterson, and he was taking them on. That's probably my favourite little period of cricket that I've ever seen.
Mm. I think the only thing missing from the series was that no sort of out-and-out eccentric took 6 for 37. But otherwise, I did love it. Well, so then, once you joined TMS, what have been the most extraordinary matches or series you've seen unfold from the box, do you think?
Well, the World Cup was an amazing thing to be working on. I use the word working in its most elastic sense, and the tension at the final, of the last sort of 2 hours of that final, and God knows what it was like for you, Woody, as a player, but I've never known just such, the whole 30,000 people just kind of gripped with tension, fear, excitement, from my point of view, at that point, the stats had sort of become completely irrelevant. So I was just sitting there in the TMS box, sweating.
Did you know the rules?
Yeah,
no, I didn't have a clue.
We didn't either.
What? I'm pretty sure they made them up. I could have just made them up. And they turned to me, so Andy, what happens if it's a tie in the Super Over? I reckon I could have made something up and someone would have been listening to it in the pool and said, yeah, let's go with that, and they'd have run with it. So
I think the number of people in the ground that knew what was going on, I just remember they eventually had to explain over the tannoy what was going on as a result of the sort of confused hubbub.
Do you remember results in the TMS box, who would look the most nervous? Because obviously from Sky, they can cut to the commentators, can't they, and show them. Yeah. But TMS, there's not always the camera there. Was anybody particularly walking around or looked really nervous?
I can't remember. Michael Vaughan was visibly trembling from what I remember. I think everyone was, really. Jeremy Coney was most on edge as our New Zealand. But it was just, I mean, I was sort of sitting at the front now, so I couldn't really see what was going on behind me. But it was, you know, just such an incredible moment of sporting drama.
But did you not also go to an Indian the World Cup in India?
I did, yeah. So I was there for Crick Info. So I saw India win in Mumbai, which was fairly spectacular, and hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets.
That must have been extraordinary. That's when Donny push himself up the order in that final run chase?
Yes. He went in ahead of Yuvraj, I think, and made 90 odd not out and finished it with that gigantic six. But I mean, so I started on TMS in 2016, just doing the white ball stuff, and it, you know, a great time to work on the England white ball team, as it, you know, to sort of change the following year after the 2015 World Cup, and then to follow that, you know, your team Woody through those years. And what was really interesting was, I mean, and I don't know, you know, you have an interesting view on this. In the months leading up to the World Cup, the you know, England had been predominantly, you know, a very effective batting side. But in the months before the World Cup, you came back with your sort of changed run-up. Jofra Archer came into the team, and and it was almost the bowling that ended up winning England that tournament, having been, you know, the team that was, you know, smacking massive scores all over the place, and in the final it ended up as a low score. I mean, did you feel that was sort of coming together as you went into the tournament? You felt that you were all sort of, you had, you know, more dimensions as a bowling side.
Yep, and firstly, I'd say definitely you can come back on. And secondly, yeah, I thought that, you know, we were quietly confident in my bowling attack. I think the batting has always been, you know, we'll blast teams away. It's a phenomenal lineup. They just keep coming and coming. But, you know, I think Wokesy was at the height of his powers. Yeah. Jofra had come in. He was fresh, raw, give her another, you know, dimension with high pace and high skill.
Pudsey well in the middle West overs Indies. As well.
Pudsey, you know, we had Tom Curran on the bench. Stokes, he was obviously bowling. He took wickets the first game, I remember. So as a team bowling department, we're pretty good.
You got two really
exactly,
good spinners.
Rashid and Moore. So we felt like we had them all covered. It was just that it, more often than not, we had to hold one nerve because the batting would set it up for us, and then we would have to, you know, just back them up. But it was weird because Morgs obviously liked to bowl first, and he thought whatever happens, we'll knock it off anyway. So we had that confidence, weirdly, no matter how it went, that even if the opposition got 300, we would still knock that off easily. It was just strange that I guess that the pressure was off the bowlers in a way, and that's probably what helped us during that tournament, that we just felt that no matter what happened, the batten would sort us out.
So in your situation then, Zoltz, seeing now so much cricket live, do you find the most nerve-wracking / exciting moments then are when we're bowling or when we're batting?
Well, I don't know about some nerve-wracking excitement. I mean, there's just something about that world.
Obviously, you're an absolute neutral. You're a member of the press. There's nothing going on at the surface.
I think I'm quite neutral in the sense that I just love cricket. And, you know, mostly if the World Cup final did feature England, but had it featured, you know, any two teams, I think would have been, you know, gripping whatever happened. But, yeah, I don't know. I do find I've always loved Test cricket the best. And a good Test match, that elongated tension over days and days. And they're just emotionally draining to work on in the media. And I don't know how players get through them. I find at the end of a Test match, I've just been sitting there looking up stats, I'm absolutely knackered. So I don't know. I mean, do you find ways to, as a player, Mark, when you just kind of learn to, you know, switch off those, you know, times when you're, say, sitting in the pavilion, and so it doesn't quite overwhelm you like that?
No, not really. I think you switch off at the end of the Test. What happens is the adrenaline keeps you going. The thought of what might be to come, the thought of, you know, how you're going to bat, or how you're tactically going to bowl, or how the game's going. You seem to just be on that treadmill, and you can sort of switch off at night time of the games, but you don't fully switch off. And then after the game, it's sort of like a massive release of emotion, a bit of a come down, and then I think that's when you feel most tired, because you've been so hyped up for 5 days. You know, you're playing for your country, you know, the game dictates how you might feel at certain points. Even if you're winning, you're still not relaxed, because you know that the game is finished. So I wouldn't say at the end of day's play, I'm certainly tired when we've been bowling, but I would say at the end of the game, mentally, you're very drained. So at the end of the game, you're probably most tired.
But with that amount of adrenaline, are there times when you've, during a test match, you're taking the field having had essentially no sleep? If it's a nerve-wracking game and the adrenaline's pumping, I don't know how...
A couple of times, yeah.
And you would take the field having had not a wink.
A couple of times. I mean, Australia away recently, that was pretty tough because we weren't batting as well, or we would spend a long period in the field bowling. Then we would get bowled out and then we'd be back in the field again. So actually you were never getting that like mental break or mental switch off, or even physical switch off, because you're tired, you're sore. And then, of course, we're in the field for a long time again because we're not bowling them out. I think we only bowled them out once that last game. So we're in the field a lot that series, and then we weren't getting the runs. So it was pretty tough mentally and physically. And sometimes you'd be going back in the field where you'd go back to your hotel room and think, like, I'm next in tomorrow. Like, and you just bowled the whole day. And you're like, next in tomorrow, I'm worried, like, you know, am I going to be able to affect the game? You might not have much sleep. And then you're back in, you know, batting and fielding the next day. It can be brutal, but you front up because of who you're playing for. You know, there's loads at stake and loads on the line, so you front up for that.
Yeah, I still think it's hardest for the spectators. Andy, what, as a player, though, we've established that you had a brief, ultimately tragic stint as a wicketkeeper. What have been your greatest moments as a player?
My greatest moments as a player? Oh, I don't. I mean, I scored a 100 for my village team in a Sunday friendly.
Really?
We're chasing 240, and I was not out at the end, and we won by 2 wickets. And
I don't think I would ever come down from that.
It's very hard to overstate the sort of quality of that level of cricket, or understate it, or the anti quality, but still having.
Oh yeah, doing your solid disservice here. 100, a match winning 100, knocking it off.
Local derby as well, Penshurst against Lye.
I thought taking a catch would be an unbelievable buzz. I remember once taking 3 catches in a game in which I bowled a couple of dreadful overs, and I can't remember if I batted or not. For whatever reason, I took 3 catches, and that gave me almost as big a buzz as any kind of experience.
And you didn't sleep that night, did you? And you had a bat the next day. See, thanks everyone.
Yeah.
I once dropped the same batsman 3 times in 20 minutes. That was a real low light.
Where were you fielding?
Well, in various different places. The captain moved me around to try and get me out of the firing line. But
that always happens, doesn't it? How does it just follow you? It always happens, that, doesn't it? You drop one and the ball keeps following you everywhere. Horrible.
But in that, because I used to like the level of cricket where it was necessary to have what do you call it? The person, you have to have someone on the boundary behind the wicketkeeper, because the wicketkeeper's success rate, what's that called?
Full stop.
Backstop. That sounds very American, though, doesn't it?
No, that was still, I think I'm the
full, old. Full backstop. Yeah. Backstop, and that would be like one of the first fielding positions. You'd be like, well, we need someone really good at backstop when you're like 11, and you know you're doing pretty well to stop the ball if it's gone past the batsman somehow. You're doing pretty well for the keep. Certainly, the teams that I would play in. What would be your favourite position, Andy, as a fielder? Though, I mean, do you prowl the covers? Do you
No. I don't think I have one. I was a terrible fielder. I did used to enjoy wicket keeping, but because I wasn't very good at it. I did once have a stumping in a school match. I remember I took the ball, whipped towards the stumps, massive appeal, but I'd missed the stumps and with the ball. So I was appealing, having just taken a massive air shot at the stumps. That feeling of humiliation still burns to this day.
Sure, a blushing Zoltzman is a very, very upsetting sight for the entire community. What do you think is about to happen then, statistically or otherwise, to England now? Suddenly, we've had these. At the time we're recording this, we're 2-0 up in a Test series against New Zealand. There's been, presumably, from your envious position. A very visible change in the sort of team dynamic, in the atmosphere. What do you imagine the next 6 months might bring? Statistically, what will it bring? Presumably you already know. The algorithms have done the work.
Statistically, yeah. I imagine it will bring a lot of runs for Joe Root, who seemed, and I don't know how much you've seen of the series so far, Mark, but he just seemed so kind of jovial in the field without the burden of captaincy. It's been really great.
Yeah, I've watched quite a bit. It does seem that way, and the report I'm getting is that it's, you know, the captaincy, that there's a weight off his shoulders. He's, yeah, you know, back to that cheeky lad and cheeky chap that he was. He looks a lot happier and, like, just there's a weight off his shoulders, I guess.
And that's why he's in that kind of Andy Zaltzman scoring a not out century to win the game kind of
yeah,
kind of mindset.
I don't. I mean, it's an interesting summer. In that, I mean, I think South Africa is going to come with a really strong seam attack, and after, you know, a couple of not great years, they've had some really good results recently, and, you know, really, and I've got two really good spinners, four or five really good seamers. I think that could be a really, really interesting series. You know, it is really exciting to see, you know, to see England, batting with that kind of freedom. I mean, I guess the challenge is when the ball is moving around, whether they can sort of maintain that. But yeah, it's exciting times.
And what else is going on in your world? Obviously, you've got huge amounts of airtime with TMS. You've had a pretty good lockdown from my perspective, Andy. Have you got lots of stand-up stuff coming up as well? Like, would you do the job I used to do, the news quiz chair? Yeah. So that will keep you in meat and mortgage. But are you having time to do live work?
I did a tour in sort of February and March, and then a London run in May. I've got a few more dates in November, but no, it's mostly the news quiz, which is sort of half the year, and cricket, which is, there's a lot of cricket on.
It's 24/7. Yeah.
Stats never sleep.
And we did a tour together, Mark. Me and Zoltz did a, I mean, I say a tour, I think it was three or four dates.
Tour is really, really making it sound a lot more grand than it was.
But we do one half of the show each, and the running order was based entirely on sort of geography, really, and who would be where or whatever. I can't remember where they did them.
Colchester was one.
I'm certainly remembering Colchester. I remember you having a very funny routine that very slightly appalled them. It was to do with there'd been like a sort of floods and then a lack of water. And I just remember, I remember laughing, because it's in a former church, isn't it, Colchester Arts Centre? I remember laughing and hearing my own laugh echo around the church in response to you saying the words, good old British piss. I can't remember what the sort of fundamentals of the routine were, and you're too prolific to remember, but I just found it so completely...
I can't believe you haven't played cricket together.
Yeah, well, we should rectify that, Bars. I mean, I haven't played a game in 4 years now, so...
Really? I think I've played about three in that time.
Miles is on my radar for my comeback right. Net. Miles has agreed to get in there, so maybe you could strike up a batting partnership together.
Right, okay, yeah.
You could be Tavery, he could try and be both of them.
I think that's wise. I think you would be able to map out exactly what my, you know, you could do like a sort of wagon wheel in advance of my likely scoring areas. Third, I mean, if I could get some bat in it, I'd say third
backstop.
Man would be... third man would be kept extremely busy if I'm able to get any bat on it. The physio would be, I mean, he would be shattered. We might need a sort of second and third physio. Because I faced one delivery of Mark. He was it was with a tennis ball, and it was of no steps whatsoever. But I found that a little frightening, you know, and he wasn't even fully fit. Right.
What kind of speed? What kind of miles and hours that do you reckon?
Probably. I know having tested it out on the bowling machine with Tom Tuck at the Oval, that if it's faster than 62, I cannot see it.
Because when they do, I mean, if we're doing Woody's comeback net, that extra 30 miles an hour can make quite a difference, can't it?
Yeah. If you're roaring a hit and bowl at 96, is it 96.7? Is that what we established as your fastest speed ever?
It's 97.1, but yeah, close enough.
97.1. What was that? What game was that in?
That would have been 2020 against India at Ahmedabad. The ball was to Rohit Sharma. It was boxer.
I can't really
remember, if I'm honest. It's all a blur.
Yeah.
do you look at speeds, your speed data?
Sometimes, like if I've felt particularly sharp, I might go to the analyst and say, "Oh, how quick is it today?" And it depends if I've bowled poorly, but I've still bowled fast, he'll go, oh, wasn't that quick today? But if I've bowled fast and bowled well, he'll go, yeah, that was quick today. So I think he assesses the mood pretty well.
Have you ever come back and like sat down with the analyst and he goes, do you want to see your pitch map for today, thinking that you've been bowling all right? And then he goes, there it is. And you think, bloody hell, what's that? It looks like someone's dropped a Connect 4 set or something.
Well, that's the one I'm most upset with, is that, mate, the World Cup final, my first spell is awful. I can't watch it back. I'm so hyped up to try and do well because I was desperate to get on, desperate to do well, you know, tried too hard to make an impact. And I've watched it back and I'm like, why am I not just hitting the top of the stumps here? The pitch is doing a little bit. Wokesy's ball, like, tremendous. And I'm spraying it all over. And it wasn't until I came back when I was into the game that I was much better. But that first spell, I literally can't watch it. It's like, it's just, I would hate to see the pitch, mama. I mean, the analyst, I remember asking him, you know, at the time, how quick I'd bowl, because I was chasing, obviously, Jofra for the quickest ball. But I dare't ask him what my pitch map was like. I couldn't face it.
But even though it's what you do for a living, I think feeling nervous in a World Cup final, I think you're allowed to forgive yourself that, Mark.
Yeah, but you want to give a good account of yourself, don't you? And that's what I'm trained to do. I'm trained to bowl well in those moments, and I didn't bowl well that first spell. But I came back well, which was particularly pleasing.
Well, I mean, you know, that I think if you're not happy with the way that tournament ended, there's something.
Like we mentioned before, I hated the game. Honestly, hated it. The result was obviously the best feeling ever, and, you know, the best moment ever. But the game was awful to be a part of. It was tense. It was horrible.
And it was quite a tricky pitch, wasn't it? It was, you know, both sides sort of struggled to get any fluency.
But I just remember the atmosphere was nervous in the ground as well. I've told you this before, I'm sure, but I went thinking it would be like, oh, I've got to get up there, got to get there early, just soak up all the atmosphere. But actually, when I got there, it was like 30,000 really nervous people. 9 hours later, nothing seems to have changed apart from the scoreboard. It's just still, yeah, that kind of thing. I sent you that video, didn't I, recently, Woody, of that that I filmed of us singing Sweet Caroline in the do they sing that in the box, Andy, in the commentary box?
I can't remember if anyone joined in, actually, but I mean it was a
that sort of behaviour is a little bit Sky, isn't it?
I'm sure Athos was belting it out at the time.
But it was just, in fact, it was so good because obviously nobody knew the rules, but we knew the lyrics of that song, and that was something that everyone was able to try to.
Was that deliberate?
What?
So good.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
I thought you genuinely did that deliberately.
Synchronicity. So good. I've been told. Is that count? No, you're not interested anymore. Well, Andy, I think it is time. It's been very generous of you to come onto this podcast, and I mentioned it to you a long time ago. We've made it happen. You've got an exciting summer ahead of you,
and we've set up a new batting partnership with the two of
us.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it'll be one of those nets where basically, because we'll just call. We should. It's a chance for us to practice our running between the wickets, Andy, which we've never done before. But I can already tell you, I imagine it would be absolutely fucking shocking. The pair of us calling and being easily distracted and getting overexcited, or possibly stopping to reminisce.
Yes. I've lost the yard of pace over the years as well. I will throw that into. I've got to factor that in.
I am yet to gain a yard of pace.
I only had one. I've lost my one and only yard.
But let's. So I hope you have enjoyed the summer and winter ahead of you. But we've got time for Woody's super over now. Ever popular furniture item. I mean, top content. Woody's super over. So I'm going to be on the clock.
Zoltz, are you ready?
Right, ready. Born ready.
Right, Miles, you tell me when the clock's ready.
I wasn't born ready. I was born wondering, or asking the question. Remind me how this works again. That was something. Oh yeah, I was with Rory Bremner at the weekend, Andy, and he was talking about that very funny routine you have about when you helping your wife deliver a baby.
Oh, yeah. Yes, our baby, not just any old baby. It was our
Oh right, he was. I thought deliberately vague about it. No, he was delivering your baby, and that was a line I searched for the hero inside myself.
Oh yeah, and he wasn't in, and I just found a large pile of unopened post addressed to the hero inside myself, suggesting that he'd never lived at that address.
In that,
that if I may say, is classic.
Thank you.
Andy Zaltzman, the apotheosis of the oeuvre. I have 1 minute 30 seconds on the clock ready to go for you to fill as you please. Ladies and gentlemen, your time starts now.
White spikes or coloured spikes?
Oh, white.
Favourite TV owl?
TV owl? I can't think of any TV owls. Richie Beno, he's basically an owl.
Most random celebrity contact in your phone.
The most random no, pass. I don't know. I can't think of any. Sorry, I'm gonna have to play and miss at that one.
Your first cricket bat?
Gunn and Moore. One a little blue and green stickers down the back. I think it might have been a Maestro, might have been the one pre-Maestro. Yeah.
Favorite sandwich filling?
Favorite sandwich filling. I will go for blue cheese, salami, and red currant jelly.
Turning pitch or green top?
Turning pitch.
Heaviest item you've ever dropped on your foot?
Typewriter.
Have you ever been mistaken for a famous person or another cricketer?
I don't think I've ever been mistaken for another cricketer. I used to get heckled about people. I used to get heckled about looking like Art Garfunkel, but I don't think I was ever actually mistaken. And also Queen Elizabeth I. But again, I don't think people mistook me for Elizabeth I.
The time is gone, but I don't want it to end. Keep going. No, I don't want it to end.
We've got two left. Mike Gatting is coming for dinner. What are you going to cook for him?
An elk?
You walk out the bat. What are you going to ask the umpire for when taking guard?
Oh, leg stump every time.
Zolt, that was quality.
That was very
fine.
By
the barest of all margins, Miles.
I think you're the first person that hasn't been able to easily recall their first bat. That seems to be. I mean, you've got a lot of numbers near the surface, I guess.
I remember it was a Gunn and Moore, but I couldn't remember what make it was. I think it was just like a basic. I'm not even sure it had. So I did it. My second bat was a Maestro. The first bat was just had the narrow stickers down the back.
Elk.
I've got it somewhere. An elk.
Elk.
Yeah.
Elk. A very fine answer. The sort of celebrity. Yeah, that's no. Maybe there are no celebrities in you, or you don't think of people
you,
in that
Can
way.
Can I count you?
Am I random? Am I a celebrity? Are any of us really here? If that counts. Do you know our best ever answer for that? And we were genuinely surprised by this. Simon Telfour.
Right.
Guess, and we've asked other guests to guess this. Guess who Simon Telfour's unexpected or random celebrity in his mobile phone contact book was.
We've got to give him a clue.
I don't think we do. I think Andy's so bright. His knowledge is so all-encompassing. He's always been able to divine information and things like that.
Was
he's
it
connected
the Pope?
To the Mafia, famously. The Pope is actually a very close answer. It really? Is the leader of a religion, of a faith.
Archbishop of Canterbury?
Oh, no, that's... This is your
Rabbi?
Sort of... This, right, that is... No, no. Just what other world faiths are left?
Dalai Lama?
Yes!
Hey!
Yes! There we go. He'd be a great umpire, the Dalai Lama. He's calm under pressure. Yeah.
That's right. Do you think? I think sometimes he might take quite a long time to give a decision.
Yeah.
Archbishop of Canterbury. That's your Kentish bias showing there. I'm afraid, Andy. I know you always try and bring him into things, but no, that was the wrong answer. But yeah, I remember being there when you got or once. I've seen you live so many times.
Miles. I tell you what, we haven't discussed with Andy here. He said turning pitch. I think that's the first one we've had this series.
Everyone.
Normally people say green top. Yeah, turning pitch. That was the first one. Must be the wicketkeeper, and I'm likes to get low on those turning pitches.
But I've definitely been at a gig of yours when someone's shouted, "Sing Bright Eyes." And you looking, I think it's fair to say, tired. what an absolute treat to have on Middle Please Umpire. Andy Zaltzman, polymath, dramaturg, roller coaster hater, log flume
aficionado.
aficionado. Yeah, that's right. Are there any of your job titles that we've forgotten?
No, it's mostly the log flumes these days. Keeper of the almighty shed.
Shed keeper, dance captain.
All of those.
Yeah. Brilliant. Andy, thank you very much indeed for being a guest on Middle Please Umpire. Andy Zaltzman there, the Test Match Special statistician, and indeed...
I thoroughly enjoyed that, Miles.
Astonishingly brilliant satirist. He's great. I've known him for 2 decades. I remember going to see a show he did in Edinburgh, round about the millennium. It was called Andy Zaltzman versus the Dog of Doom. And another one he did the year later, Andy Zaltzman and the Catapult of Truth.
So if we were to do a sort of Test Match Special style finish, it would be... And Zaltzman and Jupp have put on a fantastic partnership here. Match winning. Jupp with his flamboyant shots through the onside. Zaltzman through the offside. It's been a cakewalk for these two in the end. Only we can hope that these two bat together more often and possibly win more games for England.
Mark, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. I would like to hear you in the Test Match Special Box again. Not before you've come in and... Bowled some 97.1 mile an hour deliveries, obviously.
I don't think that'll be really my style. Though. Maybe wiggy. Open up the door, got the keys to your city. Jupp B. Zaltzman, here they come. They're going to knock off. All done.
Mark, how on earth, how have you been able to keep that under wraps that you can freestyle like
wraps.
That?
Wraps. Love that.
Keeping your ability to...
Horns out left, right and centre.
How have you been able to do that? That was why Coolio's career tailed off, because he couldn't freestyle. And there's you wandering around being able to do that. Instead, choosing to, play international sport. Extraordinary the way things turn out. Thank you very much indeed for listening to Middle Please Umpire. Please continue to write emails and letters into our virtual or possibly real mailbag with sightings and stories. We're all always genuinely delighted to receive them and to read them out and chortle. So thank you very much indeed. It's bye from me, Miles.
And I'm off to put my comfy Step One pants on. Goodbye from me, Mark Wood.
Oh, should be taken and is taken. Brilliant from Mark Wood. What a spell this has been.
Every day, William Hill has advanced odds on cricket matches. That includes flash odds ahead of the big games, plus hashtag your odds and much more. Stake limits apply. Odds may fluctuate. Visit williamhill.com, 18+. Please gamble responsibly. William Hill, it's who you play with.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.